You're listening to Save My City, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Tony Mangini.
Hi, I'm Tony Mangini, and I want to welcome you to our inaugural Save My City podcast. Save My City is a project that we've initiated here at the league trying to reform our municipal finance system, because what we have in Michigan is a fundamentally broken finance system, and we think if we don't change it, we're all headed for some pretty tough times. And so I'm really happy to have with me today two guests. I've got Richard Lewis, who is a council member in the city of Traverse City and a former city manager there as well, and Shay Charles, who's a city manager in Howell, Michigan. And thank you both for being with me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So what I want to talk about, and you guys know as well as I do, maybe even better, the challenges we're all facing. And it's not one area of the state. It's really something that's affecting cities across Michigan. So I'd just be curious to hear from your perspectives. How's it affecting your community, what you see? Shay, what do you got?
So I've been with the city for 13 years. I've been in municipal management for over 20 years now. And what was fundamental flaws with Proposal A Headley, we all knew beforehand, but times were good and we were all getting through it. With a great recession, it was really such a great reset of values and the fundamental structure. So between that, between loss.
So explain what happened there, though. I think a lot of people don't even understand what that meant.
So headed into the recession, we were seeing, you know, we're in a high growth area, so we're seeing good property value growth and whatnot, and got into the recession and we lost 35% of our taxable value. You couple that with about a 25% drop in revenue sharing, pretty catastrophic. And I think people understand always that during bad times, numbers go down, tighten your belt, you get through it and whatnot. But because the way the dysfunction of the system it is that we have now, we never recovered from the recession. We're still running with revenues that are almost 30, 40% less than in our peak back in 2007. So you think 10 years later, how do you operate on a revenue stream that's actually equivalent to the year 2000 for us? And you have that revenue pressure, then you have cost pressure, legacy costs, things of that nature. You could probably handle the legacy costs, you could probably handle the revenue stream, but it's all heading at once. And for us in a quote unquote high growth area, it defies logic.
It is amazing. Now, in Traverse City, I mean, you guys are booming up there. You have to assume you have a little bit different reality.
Well, there is a little bit of a different reality. I left Traverse City in September of 2008, and then in October 2008, the world came apart in all local governments. And a year later, you know, everybody's struggling, and Traverse City had to go through their issues. Fortunately, today, with development, and we are a prime location where development is going to take place. We're the regional hub for five counties for all practical purposes, and the major medical centers are there. So everything takes place there, and this is we've become a hot spot where people want to locate, if nothing else, on a permanent basis or have a second home in the area, including our downtown.
And so what would Traverse City look like right now, though, if you didn't have that growth? What would be the circumstances of the finances there?
Finance side of it all, and I was going to get all that. We have all that, but because of everything else that's going on, we're not flush with cash. We don't get to do all the big things that people think that we can do. We still lack, you know, a lot of infrastructure we got to do. There's streets that aren't being repaired. We don't have all the extra cash that people think, oh, look, all this is happening. It's not, you know, the cash isn't there. And the way the structure is set up between the Headley and between the Proposition A and everything else that goes along with it, we as a city council, when the manager presents us the budget, we can cover most of the essentials, but we've got streets that are just in total disrepair. Now, one thing that has helped, the public up there, the county, adopted a road millage, and we get our share of that. I can't tell you what would have happened if the public hadn't done that. And it's almost come to the point that if they're not going to fix the broken system, we need the legislature to sit there and say, give us the optional tools that if we want to do something ourselves, don't stop us. We'll take care of it. If you're not going to fix a system that you promised, and I know a lot of people aren't there yet, but they've got their pressure, but you promised this. you're not going to do it, then give us the, allow us the tools that we have to make the local option of implementing.
You know, you said something that's really interesting because I think a lot of folks don't realize this. They assume a couple things. One, if the economy's good, things must be good with the city as well, right? I mean, if my 401's looking great, you guys must be great. And that's, as we all know, isn't how that works. The second thing that I think people are really surprised to find out, and you just hit on it, Richard, we don't have the ability to just do whatever we want. So people think, well, you could levy a millage, you could do this, you can raise money a variety of ways. And in Michigan, if you don't have authority to do it, you can't do it.
No.
Well, you can't do it, and they continuously limit how you do it or raise the bar on, oh, gee, you want to raise millage rate. Okay, you have to go through this election process and things of that nature. I talked years ago with a former state legislature, and he looked at me, he says, well, you just need to learn to justify your existence. And I argued with him, why did you create a system that is designed to fail? With the Headley rollbacks and Proposal A, it is designed eventually we will get to zero mills. And I looked at him and I said, did the state create a system that each year you had to justify your existence to the voters? Absolutely not, because it defies logic. But to go back to a point you made before, the economy is really good right now. And Michigan has recovered nicely. We're seeing all the positive signs for Howell right now. Over the last 5 years, we've experienced about $160 million of new industrial development in the city. The vast majority of that was personal property. So between that and just some absurd rulings out of the tax tribunal for our large industrial property, we are only generating $25,000 a year out of $160 million investment. It defies logic. And you tell that to people, and I share it with colleagues, and they either have similar stories or they look at me and go, what did you do wrong? And we walk through what happened, and they go, this is absolutely insane.
Well, to build on something you said a minute ago about that contrast between us and the state, the economic development tools primarily, as you guys know, require the city to forego their revenues to make that happen. The state still gets the benefit of income tax and sales taxes and the other things that go on, so we don't do that. So you see a big development come to town, you must think, well, here you go, Richard. Now you got the money to do what you needed to do because we've done this stuff. No, because we had to give up our piece of that to make this thing happen, and people don't understand that.
Yeah, and you know, you give an example, and you know, tax increment financing within DDA districts. In early 80s, the city created what was known as TIF 2. You know, and they had this projected growth of it to be very slow over the years and all. Well, development took place. We had a major industrial site that just got totally redeveloped, and the monies were just, you know, at the end of 30 years, the city kept its promise. It said, okay, we're going to renew the program, but we start over again. We just reauthorized it. We didn't continue it and kept them, you know. But, you know, all of a sudden, the city itself got a nice little windfall, but they had to wait 30 years of $300,000 a year of extra tax revenue that comes in. And so did all the other taxing units. They got that. But they also got to look back and say, here was this developed, here was this, here's a parking deck that got developed to help take care of all that public. And we're not talking private. That's brownfield. That's another issue. But this is public. It's owned by the citizens of the city and of the county. They put their investment in. So is TIF financing a great tool? Yes, it's a great economic tool, and I am convinced it. You know, using it for public infrastructure, which helps to promote the economic development, yes. But we all have to understand, for the public, general public, we're waiting. Now, is it better to do it that way, or does the city pay all that up for front costs without anything back? So, yeah, it's a great good tool. It's always a question, are we subsidizing, not subsidizing? We're all subsidizing something.
Well, that's very true.
Yeah, so.
Well, and just to build on what you said, Tony, though, what we saw, particularly with the current administration, and you understand some of the logic behind it, but they said, okay, we're not going to pick and choose winners, et cetera. It went all to the local level, and we get to give up that revenue at the local level to help fund the state. And again, that's that fundamental flaw. So, okay, we gave up the revenue. You see all the job creation. The state gets all the money, and we're left with all the costs. So this kind of constant pushing down of, you know, the assorted unfunded mandates of, oh, here you need to do this. Oh, and you need to give up this tax revenue so that you can get this new job creation. and we're not going to honor our commitments for revenue sharing, and we're going to continue to restrict your ability to collect different revenue sources, it does not work.
So let's talk real quick. You said that a couple of times now about not fulfilling those promises that they were made, mm-hmm. specifically about revenue sharing. And for those folks that don't know, revenue sharing is money that comes from the state. They collect the sales tax, and they're supposed to distribute that back to us. It's actually in statute how much money to flow down to local government. And going back to 2002, they've not done that. In fact, they've kept over $8 billion at the state level. And what's interesting about that, when you talk to people about the services they value, no one talks about what the state does. They talk about the stuff that's being done at the local level. Mm-hmm. And those are the very services that we're starving to try to balance the budgets. And the state's essentially balancing their budget on backs of local government. So, you know, what's your perspective? Do you guys agree with that perspective? Do you hear folks clamoring for more of the, you know, quote unquote state services? Or are they clamoring for, you know, police, fire, and recreational opportunities and things like that?
I was going to say, the calls we get as public officials are constantly, you know, gee, we'd like more cops. Can you fix my road? Things of that nature. And we say, you know, blame the state. We get this. No, but you're the locals. You need to deal with this issue. So I absolutely agree with that.
And let's be honest about it. You know, if there's something that's not happening right out there on the state level, these folks aren't running to Lansing to sit there in front of a public meeting at any time. They're at the city council meetings. They're at the township halls. They're at the county council, because that's where they want to be heard and they want to do this. And most of the folks want, you know, to know that their taxes that they pay are being worthwhile. And it is interesting, and I'm sure it's the same in most cities. Somebody says, well, I wrote you a check for X. Well, they didn't write. Yeah, they wrote the city of Traverse City on there, paid their taxes, but they probably don't look at it. They think it all came to the city. No, we just got to keep our little share of it, and the rest of it took off, including to the state and to everybody else. Here's your all's taxes. Here's, you know, for your property. And I think they gave all that to the city. And that's another thing, you know, we want the citizens to be engaged, to learn and to understand how it all works. Because I think the more they start to understand how the entire system works, not just local, you know, townships and the revenue sharing and state government and how it all plays, such as the program you're working on, say, you know, Save Our Cities. Once people start understanding it and they see it, they go, oh, this is how this is taking place. I didn't know that.
Well, it's funny because I think you're right. Most people don't have that deep understanding.
And why would they?
Yeah, and why would they, right? Yeah. I mean, in normal times you wouldn't. But nobody says, when they say, where are you from? You don't say you're from Michigan. You're from Howell. You're from Traverse City, right? Mm-hmm. That's how people think about this mm-hmm. stuff. Even businesses, when they're locating, look to those things. And, you know, I think right now I know both your communities fairly well. Two distinctly different places, great in their own right. And people went there for a reason. Mm-hmm. And yet when the state imposes the cuts they impose on us, we attack the very thing that's attracting people there in the first place. It just doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and we become, you know, municipalities, cities, villages, you know, and unfortunately there's some very bad examples of some cities doing some things that you look at and go, really, you did that? And they're obvious, but the legislature absolutely enjoys, oh, see, it's all the municipal's fault. It's not our fault. You just need to learn to balance your budget at a local level. And I always, you know, I argue constantly with our state legislators, well, I can balance my budget real easily, too. Look, I'm just not going to honor my commitments. I'm not going to pay these bills. It doesn't work that way at a local level. But the state has, as you said before, balanced its budget on the backs of municipalities.
You know, you said something there, and this is something that I've been thinking about a little bit lately. We have, for all intents and purposes, decided that if you balance your budget, you're a good manager.
Yeah.
And you're a well-run city. Doesn't matter how, as long as the budget is balanced. And we don't stop to think, what's the ramifications of that? If I'm a less desirable place because I've had to make such deep service cuts, have we won? Is that winning?
Well, and that's it exactly. Richard made the observation earlier about streets in his community. We have the exact same issue in our community of, you know, gee, we've had to cut back on staff, had to cut back on services. We are constantly deferring capital expenditures. And the bill's going to come due. Roads do not improve with age.
No. No,
it is not wine. You know, but having said that, we get judged on that just pure. Oh, look, it's a balanced budget. You're doing your job really well. Yeah, but the roads, you know, and it's, you think about your home. Well, my checkbook's balanced, but the roof is leaking, things of that nature. You still got to make those investments in your community. You still have to maintain it as a great place. And again, during the recession, when times were bad for everybody, yes, everybody's got to tighten their belts and whatnot. But what defies logic at this point is the economy's good and municipalities are still struggling. We're still dealing with the same issues. Richard and I have known each other for a number of years and interacted on various committees over the years. And it's one thing in my profession as a city manager, okay, managing during tough times is tough enough, but we're still in the good times. We're still struggling with the same issues, and it just doesn't make sense at all.
So, Rich, I want to take a little slightly different spin on you in that same question. So, you know, we're always being challenged. If you ran government like a business, you wouldn't have these problems. And you guys are getting, you know, all this investment. You've got a lot of development going on, and those folks that are coming are going to have an expectation of service levels, of capital investment, all the things that Shay just talked about. But in Michigan, we don't provide the resources to make those investments. I can't think of a single successful business that thrives without investing in their infrastructure, in their capital, in their people. Thoughts?
I had the privilege of being the city manager for Traverse City for 17 plus years. And then I went into private business, you know, because I said, well, I've never had to work in the private sector. So I did, and I was happy to do that. But I found that at local level, we could move quicker, faster than sometimes than a very large corporation can move. And for good reasons. I mean, there's international laws and things such as that. But you're right. They make a point to invest more into their people. Mainly in probably wages. They make sure the equipment is what they're going to have is up to speed. But when they run into rough times, you watch what they do. That's called layoffs. Well, a city can only lay off so far, then we're not going to be plowing streets very well. Or that cemetery that everyone wants to go see their loved one on Memorial Day won't be cut, you know. I know in a lot of cities, we pride ourselves in this state for the greenery of our trees. There's a lot of trees that aren't being replaced out there. And these trees, just like all of us, they do have a time.
Part of who
and,
we are.
You know, and they need to be and that's part of the investment. You don't think about it, but that is the investment. You know, can you imagine going through a city that didn't have all the street trees and the canopy in their parks? You know, we want the playgrounds to look good. I mean, you know, a lot of people can't afford to have playgrounds in their backyard, but we can. But there are also places where people gather. They meet. They talk.
It's that sense of place we're always talking about.
It's a sense of place. It's what's a thriving community. But yeah. Richard, you made a great point that even in downtimes, and I had this conversation with a local businessman during the recession, and he was going through, oh, times are tough. We had to lay off staff, da-da-da-da-da. I finally looked at him and I said, understand, I don't care how bad the economy is, our phone still rings. People still expect cops to show up, the firefighters to show up, streets to get plowed. Our world doesn't stop during an economic recession. And during tightening your belts, yeah, you may not do the extra things and want to defer capital projects, but people still expect the water to run, the streets to get plowed. And our world never stops.
Well, and that's very different. And when they flush that commode, it better be gone.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is the most important local service, I might add. But I haven't called the police in a long time, but I did flush that toilet. So, I, you know, something else that I think about, too, when you kind of got there a little bit, Shay. Not only is there no connection between the revenues, whether the economy's up or down, mm-hmm. and the service demands, sometimes it's even inverse. Mm-hmm. In the harder times, the Absolutely. Residents demand even more services, yeah. because where I might have been able to backfill privately, and maybe I did private baseball or I did some, now I need the city to be in that space for me. So you actually have an even tougher hand to play.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's one that we constantly think about this. And again, I'll go back to this conversation I had with the private business person. For him, it was an absolute epiphany. He just suddenly looked at me and went, I never realized that. I never thought about that. And again, this is a bright businessman. He survived the economy and whatnot. And he'll reach out to me every so often. I'm like, how are we doing? I'm like, we're still struggling, you know, with all the challenges and the lack of revenue. And he goes, for him, it just didn't make sense either. For me, that's heartening to have somebody in the private mm-hmm. sector look at it and go, oh, this is insane, even. And we're starting to hear that more and more.
But, Shay, but that comes to the whole point. The more they understand that, yes, you, there's a lot of business principles that you can use, you know, return on investments, things like that, you know, having fund balances, making sure, you know, the checks and balances, you know, to make sure the spending is done well and following a good budget. There's a lot of that principle that is valuable, and we want to do that. But at the end of the day, we can go bankrupt, but we really can't. We're still going to have to be there. The services are going to be demanded. But the more they understand, the public understands the total picture of your local government. And that doesn't just, you know, and I'm going to put it, that's not just cities. It's your local colleges. Mm-hmm. That is your schools. You know, there's a lot of local governments out there in a lot of formats, and they all have to work under the same principle. Most of it deals with taxes and how it comes. You know, it doesn't make it everybody talk about us, but you know, the schools have their issues, and we all do.
Well, and I think,
but in the end of the day, what we're trying to do is create our communities, to create a good educated workforce. We want a community where they're proud to live, play, and work, and stay and raise their families. We want them to have recreation opportunities, whether it's active or passive. We want them to be able to walk through their downtowns and not see vacant stores, but have a place that they can go and have a good time. You know, and all this takes, you know, and I'm convinced that you make the public investment. You know, we have a street called Woodbury Avenue. We made a massive investment in that. And over time, you can see some of the improvements of different businesses or how upgrades have been made in different things. It's not all of a sudden, oh, we put $1 in here and tomorrow we got two back. It takes 20 years.
It takes 20 years. Here's the other point, too. If you want to run it like a business, the first thing you got to do is understand what the business is.
Yes.
And just like any business wants to enhance their revenue capacity, their income drivers, in a city, it's value. And how do you create value? Mm-hmm. You create that value by having strong services, a strong sense of community, create that place people want to be in. That's our revenue engine. That's how we do it. And I think we got to start thinking differently about that. And this whole idea of educating folks, and you talked about, you know, business people that don't understand. We've got to get them to understand. We need residents to understand the linkages between the services they so desperately want and the revenue system deficiencies that we have. This isn't about raising taxes necessarily. It's about fixing a systemic problem that we have here. And that's really what the Save My City initiative is all about. So I want to thank you guys for joining me today. It was really a great kickoff to our podcast here, and there's going to be a lot more of these. We really want to use this as a vehicle to get folks really understand it. So thank you very much for joining.
Thank you. We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.